Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt Ends Break continues.
So your wife tells you something. I need to know, where are we going with this?
Andy Dirt Johnson.
She said, you know what I think we should contemplate buying? She wants to put our kid on a leash.
Brandon Sprague.
It's like seeing a tiger in a zoo. You just feel awful for it.
More Dirt and Sprague.
Look, she's an unbelievable mom. She carries all the weight in our family. I have to preface all this because she says I only throw her under the bus on the air.
So you just threw her under
on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, welcome back in. Hour 2, 105.1 The Fan. And the Fan Sports Network, the Odyssey app, YouTube, 1080 AM and 105.1 FM. Good morning. Stephen Vaughn hanging out with us today.
What's going on, everybody?
How you doing so far?
Dude,
1 hour in.
I'm feeling good.
Usually
feeling
flies
energized.
Right by.
Yeah.
Flies right by. Greg Oden will be here in 1 hour.
It's exciting, man.
Have you ever met him in person?
I walked by him one time when he was heading into Chipotle, and I was heading out of Chipotle. Over by Portland State.
Say hi or just go, oh, it's Greg Oden.
No, I saw him and I'm like, oh, cool. And then, you know, my wife, we were dating at the time. She was like, hey, Greg Oden. And he's like, hey, what's up? That was it.
All right. Well, you could tell him the Chipotle story.
I could. I mean,
it'd probably be here in 45 minutes, I would guess. 45 minutes to 50 minutes. Greg Oden's going to join us from 8 to 9 a.m. in studio. I got to get Dirt's jersey signed. Look at this thing. This thing is a shoulder jersey.
Dude, I forget about the shoulders back in the day.
This is one of the worst jerseys to ever exist. I feel bad that he had to, that was his era. Because we had so many better jerseys before he got here. And they just refused to go back to the old cool ones from the 80s and the 90s. It drives me crazy. But we have a lot to get to in the second hour of the radio program. Greg Oden from 8 to 9, and then Will Power, Indy 500 champion from 2018, will join us. In 9 a.m. Well, Magic Hat it up. We got audio and odds and ends to get to in the Magic Hat, but let's step into the Cafe de Dirt and Sprague. Today on the menu, Stephen, are you a big breakfast guy?
Love breakfast. Breakfast is great.
Traditional breakfast or like you just eat whatever you want?
I mean, I would. Traditional breakfast is the best, but I will eat, you know, like today I had a bagel and cream cheese.
Okay.
That was great. But, you know, I would love, you know, eggs and bacon and toast, hash browns.
Can I interest you in this? A breakfast, this is the special today.
Okay.
Breakfast tostada. Refried beans on the base. Got hash browns on that.
Mm.
Sprinkled in with bacon bits. Chorizo for swag.
Yes.
Melted cheese, layer of guac, shredded cabbage, crema, over easy egg on top.
So now, it's a whole huevos rancheros kind of situation?
Close, but no.
Yeah.
I mean, I would eat it.
Not into it.
I don't know that I would be super into it, honestly, for breakfast.
What stops you there?
Just seems like a lot.
It's a big one.
It is. It comes
like
on a
lot.
Big platter.
It does.
You got to hold the guac for me, but other than that.
You don't like guacamole?
I'm not a fan of avocado.
Mm. I like guacamole. I'm not a big avocado guy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I understand.
Slices.
Guac's fine. It has to be a good guac.
It has to be a good guac.
Because there's some bad guac out there.
I've had bad guac.
And that is not a good thing.
It's not great. It's
so,
maybe the worst
I'm
thing.
I'm kind of with Swag. I wouldn't love the guac on there. I'd probably, you know, I would scrape a little off. I'd keep it on there, but just didn't have the whole thing.
See, I'd rather have a good ranchero sauce.
The red sauce?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What if I gave you the side of guac? Then you could distribute it how you need to.
It'll sit untouched on my plate.
Well,
so.
Okay.
See, that's what I would like. I would rather have it on the side so I can distribute it
and myself. Figure out how much you
need. Yeah, so I would eat that for sure. It wouldn't be my favorite. Like, if I saw that and I could just order regular breakfast, traditional breakfast or that, I'd go traditional.
Okay. All right. Well, you got that on the menu as well.
I
that's just
love
special
a good
today.
Huevos rancheros.
I do too. Mm. It's an amazing breakfast. Let's get it going and start with this.
Lewis, welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. It's a thrill to be here. It's a lifelong dream to be in the Phillies broadcast booth. So here we go. Painter with the first pitch to Ortiz. It's in there for strike one call. Phils with two in the bottom of the second to take the lead. As we start the top of the third, now Painter delivers. It's bounced foul towards the Phillies dugout. And the count 1-1. Phillies winning the first two games of this series. One more to go tomorrow night, and then a three-game set with the Blue Jays over the weekend. Now, Painter delivers. It's a check swing It's a called strike three. He got him. So Ortiz down.
And Lewis, you spent your life as a firefighter, police officer?
Neither of those things.
Just guessing.
I've been a substitute teacher in recent years for Nita School in Lakerland. There's a pitch that's lined over shortstop, a base hit for Dylan Cruz, and he reaches first base safely with a one-out single.
So that Sports Radio WIP Swag's giving me a look like he doesn't know about this. Stephen Vaughn told me about this. Yesterday, Nationals Phillies, a fan named Lewis, who is neither a cop nor a firefighter. He won in an auction calling an inning of the baseball game on the radio. As Stephen noted, Lewis sounds like a regular, everyday baseball play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
Sounded amazing.
Yeah. Definitely. You're like, okay, you've done this at, like, high school or small college.
For a fan, that's really good.
Dude, that was amazing. If I played that, you go, that's their Phillies guy.
He had his Brockmeyer voice going on.
I totally thought of Brockmeyer. It was a little old school.
If you called a baseball game, would you change your voice? We debate this with Joe Davis. You know Joe Davis of the Dodgers?
Yeah.
Famously does not sound anything like his broadcast voice.
Yeah, you change your voice a little bit.
I mean, we all change it a little bit because, like, I talk louder when I'm on the radio versus off.
Yeah.
But, like, ultimately, like, really change your voice.
Ground out to third.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't do it.
It'd feel like you're doing a character, wouldn't
it? Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not a character
guy. I don't think I
do.
When I do Pilots games.
I don't think you do, but you got a good play-by-play voice going for yourself.
Yeah.
I also would be horrible at play-by-play.
Baseball would be a little easier.
No, I do give a little more when I do the public address for the Hops.
Well, that's different. I mean, you're shouting a name and celebration.
You're getting everyone hyped.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, you're more of a hype guy. Baseball would be easier. My problem in baseball is from where I'm sitting, I'd never be able to tell what pitch it was. And that one down the middle.
Oh, they're all reading the game.
Strike.
Slider down in for a 2-1 count. I'd be like, pitch down low, 2-1. I would never
I'd literally be Monty from Major League. Hey, Monty, time to fill it, dude. Fly out the left.
Yeah. What sport, real quick, if you guys auctioned to do a game for however the time limit is, what sport would you want to auction to do?
Hockey.
Hockey?
Yeah.
It'd be basketball for me.
Would it?
Yeah.
I'd go football, NFL. Mm. Be badass to do some NFL
That'd
games.
Be sick.
All right, so a Phillies fan wins the auction in Philadelphia.
Relocating the Blazers would mean more than losing just a basketball team, but a part of our city's identity.
How about that? Kid, a KGW, seen at the city council rally to tell the council, give them the monies.
Yeah.
One of many to step up to the podium and say, we need to keep the Blazers here. That's a kid saying it. Had business leaders doing it as well. I thought my takeaway, we talked about this in the first hour, Stephen, is I thought it was good news of just like everybody that stepped up largely was, what are we doing? We cannot risk this. Just do the funding.
Yeah, it seems so stupid and so silly if you lose the Blazers to think that this city is doing something the right. And I do love the fact that a kid is doing that because I think the Blazers have done kind of a poor job of like engaging the younger fans and trying to get new fans. Like the whole TV deal is just so crazy. Like you couldn't watch the Blazers. Now you can actually watch the Blazers when you want. I think they're doing a lot better job of trying to get younger fans. So I love hearing a younger fan say, hey, we can't lose the Blazers. Like, I'm finally getting into it. They're finally making the playoffs. Let's get this thing going.
Order up! The ruling that came out from the NCAA, the two-game suspension, I truly believe is you look at the landscape of college football, the rules from NIL, everything. I think the ruling is completely outdated.
That was Josh Heupel, head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. He had a fifth-year linebacker come back after the judgment.
Yeah.
Arian Carter. He's been suspended 2 games. And if you're wondering why, it's because Arian Carter had an agent for a second who bought a plane ticket.
Yeah. This is dumb.
He then fired the agent or let him go, paid the agent back $427.48 for buying the plane ticket, and the NCAA came out, because he's allowed to play now with that fifth year, came out and suspended him for 2 games, and that's Heupel.
But what wasn't the whole thing is because he explored the NFL?
Something. It's yeah, something totally stupid.
So Lanning was asked about if he is going to dabble in the fifth-year guys yesterday, his post-practice press conference, and he basically was like, there's so many like avenues where they have to fit a criteria on the team.
Yeah.
Didn't hire an agent. But like the weird thing on this is he didn't actually like keep the age. He didn't
right,
keep
but it was because
agent.
He explored the NFL. That's the whole thing.
But like, yeah, but the ruling hadn't come out before exploring. He paid it back. I'm with what are we doing?
This is why the NCAA has no credibility.
This is dumb. You agree with it?
I mean, 2 games seems like a lot, but the guy tried to go to the NFL and then figured out, oh, I can't make the NFL.
Well, Stephen Daly of Indiana tried to go to the NFL.
I'm gonna go back.
Hurt.
I'm going to go back to college. I don't know. I feel like all these guys are trying to get back to college all the time. That's the way to go because you make so much money doing it.
Mm. So you're in favor of it, seems
I don't know.
Like.
I don't have a problem with it.
Really?
Yeah.
You hate Josh Heupel, too, don't you?
Yeah, he sucks.
Order up! Caleb, this team isn't picked to finish as high as maybe what this program is used to. I think the guys pay attention to that, and then over the past day or so, have you felt a sense of motivation to prove people wrong?
Yeah, we are definitely aware.
Anytime you can get a cut for 13 seconds and 11 seconds is the question, and then Kalen DeBoer says, yeah, we're aware. He's aware of the ranking Alabama has and the reputation that they're going into the season with. Not a good one. Sixth or fifth in the SEC, according to most, and outside of the top 10, Alabama. Not the most encouraging buildup for an Alabama football season that we've seen in some time.
I'm actually high on Alabama this year.
Are you?
Yeah.
They got that freshman
Keelan Russell, I think he could be pretty solid. I think DeBoer is a really good coach.
I do, too.
I do think, ultimately, he probably gets fired at Alabama because he's not winning 10-11 games every single year. Maybe doesn't make the playoffs every year. But I think Alabama could be solid this year. The recruiting numbers have been a little down, which scares me going into the future. But I think DeBoer is the type of guy that gets fired from Bama, goes to another Power 4 job, and is awesome. So I have a lot of faith in DeBoer going into this year. I think they are getting a little overlooked right now. It seems like most people have them around 15 to 20. Like, I feel like they're more towards
Their schedule's weird because they can kind of ease into it. They do have to go see what Will Stein's all about week 2. Who knows? But it's going to take Will Stein some time to put it all together.
Yeah, Kentucky's going to have to take a season or two to get up to where Will
Stein
wants.
So then they got Florida State week 3. Who knows what that's going to be about?
State?
Then you get South Carolina, but that's at home.
Yeah, but they struggled with South Carolina last year.
They did, and Beamer's job's probably on the line this season. But the meat of it is in the middle. 3 consecutive weeks, Georgia at Tennessee, then Texas A&M, then a bye, then at LSU. That's their season, those 4 games.
But they get Georgia and A&M at home.
Yes.
Do you think they make the playoff?
Yes.
It's fascinating. He got that extension, and like you said, he's going to get fired. Like, but they have to pay 90% of whatever they owe him on the contract when they fire him.
The extension was weird.
It's very odd.
Especially after the way it ended last season, getting just dump-trucked by Indiana.
Well, I wonder if Greg Byrne was like, dude, I don't want to play this coaching roulette game where we also pay $80 million and then pay another $60 to another coach. Yeah. Like, let the guy build. But to your recruiting point, Stephen Vaughn, we looked it up. Dirt found out of the 15 top recruits in the state of Alabama, they've got 0 of them.
Yeah. The recruiting's been bad with DeBoer.
That's where it really hurts.
Order up!
I'm excited about this team. We've got a lot of growth needed. We have to test toughness. And a word we talk about a lot around here is grit. And we got to find out what kind of grit we got during this camp. So when we get in these fourth quarter battles, we can win them.
There's Kirby Smart, day one of Georgia camp. Georgia, by some, picked to win the national championship or be a top 4 team. Very odd team because we know how good they are, they can be. And yet, the last couple years, just flaming out bad in the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
Is it just because Gunnar Stockton, like, do we just not trust that guy?
I think there's an element of that, yeah.
But what do you think of Georgia? Because I think they're the best team in the SEC. It's them or Texas right now, just on paper, but I don't trust Sark. I trust Kirby Smart. I think Georgia should win the SEC this year and probably make a run. Like, they're one of the teams that can win a national title this year.
What are your views on the top 4 seeds? Because right now, aren't they 1-8 off the bye? Isn't that what the top 4 seeds in the playoffs?
Yeah, Indiana's the only one that has won.
Everybody else is losing that game. So it's like it doesn't seem like much of a reward right now early on.
Right.
I think Georgia's going to get to the semis. If I was doing like a playoff predicting bracket, I think I'd have Georgia in my semis.
Yeah. But it is weird how they flamed out the last couple of years.
Very odd.
I think it goes a lot to the NIL, just losing a lot of guys. Like, it's the depth piece, and I think Georgia and Alabama, those SEC teams, have really relied on that. Where you looked at last year, even Miami and Indiana didn't have depth last year, but I think they're kind of used to it. They're like, whatever. Like, we don't usually have a bunch of good players. I think Georgia, Alabama, all those teams, they had so much depth back in the day. They're still kind of getting used to, hey, we kind of got to roll with our ones.
Well, the Bagmans are gone.
Right.
So they don't get to shore up the depth anymore, and now you've got Indiana and Oregon and all these programs. Arizona State, I mean, all of these programs now jump into this pool. The depth's gone, and if your starter's not quite the five-star you thought he was.
Right. You're kind of screwed.
You're kind of behind the eight ball.
I also just cannot wait all season long to hear about the nine-game SEC schedule and how they complained about it.
They already have.
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, they already have.
Order up! It's no secret. We want to stay independent in football for as long as we possibly can. That's important. It's part of the Notre Dame DNA, part of our identity. And Mike, when you have the history of Notre Dame, when you have the contract and the arrangement 35 years and counting with NBC, which is unique in college football, really unique in sports, certainly in football, that relationship with NBC, when you're able to invest in the facilities the way we have, when you have total alignment at the university from the top of the top with our president, Father Bob Dowd, and our chair, John V. Meyer, we're set up to stay independent, but we can't turn a blind eye to changes in the college football landscape. So we have to stay flexible. We have to be able to call audibles along the way.
There is a pseudo commissioner / athletic director, the only one who gets to operate that way, Pete Bakwa. How do you say his last name?
Bakwa.
Bakwa. Thank you. I can't stand this guy. Notre Dame gets to do whatever they want every year. I hate it.
Well, if this is where the scheduling piece, if we take advice from Jed Fish, which, you know, some of us do, some of us don't, he was all for if the Power Four conferences get together and come up with some deal where the three non-conference games are all amongst the Power Four conferences, they can force Notre Dame to join a conference.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
He sounds like somebody that knows they might eventually have to join a conference, though.
Yeah.
That's at least
because they
join
the ACC for everything else. They know that the other sports can't operate outside of a conference.
Is it ACC or Big Ten for Notre Dame? Because the Big Ten makes the most sense.
If they joined for football, it would probably be Big Ten. I would think.
Well, when the SEC and Big Ten break off, they'll invite Notre Dame and they will join for sure. So.
They'll invite Notre Dame and Miami.
Do you think that's going to happen?
Clemson, Florida State, yeah. 100%. Yeah, and I hate it too. I love college football. I think we're going down that road.
Yeah. That's all up to the TV networks. It really is.
They're the ones that did all this anyway.
Yeah. So if they think just having those two conferences and a few other teams can support itself in a league.
Because it'll be, I think it's 32 teams between the two leagues.
Yeah, it's a league. It's a literal league.
If you but they would, the team would 14, need a they more. Would add those four. They would add Notre Dame, Clemson, Florida State, Miami.
If Dabo sucks, why are we adding Clemson?
Because they're rivals with South Carolina?
I don't know. Just interesting to think about.
That is
or
true.
Maybe one, I mean, you would have, what, 36 teams?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, get to 40. Just have 40 teams. There's too many teams.
Because Texas Tech would buy their way in.
Texas Tech.
SMU would want to buy their way in.
BYU would want to buy their way in.
Right.
Yeah. Those big money programs that are on the outside of what we're talking about, and they would want that money.
And I feel like we've learned anything about college football. You can buy your way into a lot of things.
You can be bribed pretty easily.
Order up!
Here's my problem with Herbert. And I used to be a big fan, and I still like him. His last two playoff games in Houston threw five picks. Mm-hmm. Unbelievably horrific. And I understand the tackles are hurt. Lewis will get into that last year in New England. But he was terrible on that Sunday night game. Two big playoff games. He didn't show up. They don't have a home field advantage. I'm not so sold that he is going to be as good as he thought he was going to be, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
There's one of my favorites in the industry, a Hall of Famer, Chris Mad Dog Russo. He might be out on Justin Herbert now, who is 0-3 in the playoffs. The three playoff games for Herbert, 61.3 completion percentage, 43.8 completion percentage, 58.1 completion percentage. He's got two touchdowns, four interceptions in three career playoff games.
Not very good. And I also believe the fourth quarter numbers are much worse, just split-wise, than the first three quarters for Herbert. Like, he hasn't played great in the fourth quarter as well. Look, I mean, you look at Herbert, he's awesome skills-wise. He just hasn't put it together. Also, Was it his fault that the Chargers couldn't get a stop against the Jags in the playoffs?
Oh, I mean, the 27-point lead was insane.
I get it. Like, maybe he needs to make one more play, and now he's just getting killed because, I don't know, his hot girlfriend or hot fiance is playing with his hair on the sidelines. Who cares?
That's my Shanahan take, because he gets blamed for the Super Bowl loss against the Patriots, even though he wasn't the head coach.
Right.
They had 28 points against a Bill Belichick defense.
Like, we act like, like that's bad.
I know. Wait,
how about
you get a stop?
I get you need maybe like one more first down, but like also you got to that point where you're up by 25 points.
Yeah, maybe don't give up.
Right.
You know, a 25-point lead on the defensive side. Finally, here in the Cafe Dater and Sprague.
Order up!
Relief, because they needed somebody like Diggs so badly. And we've been literally stuck on wide receiver two talk for about the last two months plus. The Ayuk, you know, video series that he had out on Netflix was, you know, well-received in terms of the entertainment value, but it pretty much self-sabotaged him to a level where he was untouchable, and we knew that they weren't going to do it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and so it came down to Diggs. I don't think there was interest in anybody else, and they got it done, and they need it.
It's Kevin Sheehan on ESPN Radio, works in D.C., on the signing of Stephon Diggs to the Washington Commanders. Huh? Yeah.
I love Jaden Daniels.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's awesome.
Uh-huh.
But
he's got McLaurin and Diggs?
I
wanted my team to sign Diggs. Niners.
Everyone's hurt, so that's
the problem. All in. I mean, you're all in on this year, right? Kittle's coming back eventually. I don't know if Evans will stay healthy, but give Brock Purdy as many weapons as you can.
I'm with you. Like, Diggs, personality-wise, is a weirdo.
It's a short-term situation.
Like, he is a crazy person, but at the same time, like, he can still play.
Yeah.
He was the best receiver on the Patriots last season, made the Super Bowl. Like, he can still play. He's still young enough where he's not going to fall off a cliff, I don't think. So I don't mind the signing for the Commanders because I think Jaden Daniels just needs more help. But, man, you're right. Short-term, for sure. He's also go back home.
Absolutely. I think it's a good deal for Washington because they need to get back in the winning direction. I'm not a big Diggs guy, but if he's your two, your three, whatever, I think it's a good fit. Finally, don't have audio on it. Dylan Brooks, 3 years, $73 million deal with the Suns.
Good for him, I guess.
Dylan the villain. He pokes bears and then doesn't talk after the bear bites him, but you know what? He found a good place in Phoenix for himself.
The Suns, I feel like, are pulling a real Blazers here where it's like, hey, we made the play-in.
We're really into our guys.
Yeah, so we're going to pay them all, and now we're kind of stuck as the eighth seed.
He's an interesting player.
I like him as a player.
Would you like him in Portland?
Yeah.
Portland needs a guy like that. Yeah, I tend to agree with you. So they get their business done with Dylan Brooks. There we go. Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague. We do it every day at 7 a.m. Coming up next, some day ones in college football. Greg Oden's going to join us at 8 a.m. We're back with more on The Fan.
Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
Greg Oden's going to be here in a half hour, we think, we hope. What do we talk about? I mean, where do you start with Greg Oden? I have questions for really tall guys. How do they sleep on the road? Standard toilet work okay? Is driving fun? You know, I have tall, tall people questions.
Because you're tall.
I'm fine, you know. I'm 6'1 in shoes. I'm okay.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did he hit his growth spurt in high school, and like when did he have to start having clothes tailored?
He might have been a middle school guy. Some of those guys get to like 6'8 in middle school.
I know.
Holy crap.
And you're right about the car thing, because even me, I'm 6'2. I remember I sat in a car one time like back in the day and my head would hit the ceiling.
Right.
And I'm like,
and if you're having that issue.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not even that, like I'm 6'2. Like, how do these dudes actually do it?
And you can't, like, I know they have a lot of money, most of these guys, but like, you got to custom literally everything.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I measured my front door, and I told my daughter, if Wimby came into our house, he'd have to duck to get in. Yeah. That's nuts. Would you want to duck in every room you're going through? Be annoying.
That would be annoying.
And you'd kind of hit your head once in a while just because you're like, eh, oh, damn it.
Dude, I hit my head anyways right now because I'm an idiot.
Exactly. Exactly. So Greg Oden will join us. We'll have a lot of fun with him in the 8 a.m. hour. Let's get to some local college football. We had day ones of camp, guys.
Let's
you pretty
go.
Excited?
Oh, sure.
Expectations for the Ducks is what for you? Are you title or bust guy?
Title or bust.
Okay.
It's not title or bust because, look, if they make the title game, they make the semis, and it's a good game, I'm not going to be like, fire Dan Lanning.
Well, also, if they lose their first playoff game, are we firing Dan Lanning?
No, not. You're not firing Dan Lanning anyways, but I will say, if they flame out and they get dump trucks like they have the last 2 years,
mm-hmm.
I got real questions.
Okay.
I got real questions to ask. Not saying Dan Lanning is not the guy because I love Lanning. And, like, I'm more of a Duck hater than I would be a Duck, like, root or honor, if that's a word, root or honor.
I had you as a Duck fan for some reason.
No.
Am I wrong?
No.
Okay, I'm wrong on that.
I'm more Duck hater, but I love Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard because I'm like, I want to hate him, but I love him. I think he's great. And so, I look, on paper, I think the Ducks, you could argue, they're the best team in the nation. On paper.
Yeah.
And so, I do think that the expectations should be high. I think it's crazy that we do have these Duck fans that are like, well, we just need to take another step and not get blown out. If we make the semis in this close game, like, we should be okay. Like, I think it should be. That's the difference between the SEC and Ohio State
mm-hmm.
and Oregon right now, is you need to get the mindset, like, we should be competing for the title. We should be in the title game. We should be upset if we don't win a national championship. But again, I'm not going to say if it's an unsuccessful season, they don't win a title, but it should be. We should be in the title game. We should win a championship this year. This is the year.
Yeah. Well, you should be in the mix, right?
This is the year that they have all been waiting for. Everything has come along. And I remember talking to Brett Ciancia, pick six. Last year, he's like, yeah, Ducks will be good. Next year's the year. Everyone said next year's the year. Every national media guy, Ducks are awesome. Ducks are great. Ducks are number one. They need to be in the mix, like you said.
Yeah.
But they can't get dump trucked again in the championship game or the semis or something like that.
Well, dump trucked or not dump trucked, if they lose in the second playoff game, for example, they go to the quarters. They get out of their home game, right? Like, yeah. I use Josh Pate's bracket as an example. He has them beating Oklahoma at home, and then they play Notre Dame in the first quarter game, and he has them losing.
Right.
I'm not saying they get blown out, but like the quarterfinals for that team is going to make people be like, not feel great, right?
A little disappointing.
But to your point of, like, next year's the year, it was like that Mariota's last year.
Yeah.
It didn't have the same level of feel, but you kind of wondered that with Herbert's last year, mm-hmm. Bo Nix's last year. Like, I just feel like you're right, and also you're wrong in the sense of, like, in 2 years we're going to say this. They're going to say, hey, those sophomores, they're juniors, they're seniors, they kept them. Like, Oregon's always going to have their NIL together. They're always going to be reliable in that category. And so I think you're going to have more guys opt to stay than not in compared to most programs. And so I was like, this year's the year for Oregon. In 2 years, I wouldn't be shocked if we're saying it. In 3 years, we're saying it. Like, I think that's the kind of talent he's building. And I'm with you. Like, I really don't care all that much about the Oregon better win it, but Dan Lanning is impossible not to like. And so he is sitting with pressure. I just don't know how to gauge the pressure because I also know he's not going anywhere, and he's 39 years old.
That's the thing, is there's no pressure on him to lose his job, right? Like, it's not a Sark situation where if they go 9-3 and lose in the first round of the playoffs, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Texas is like, see you later.
Yeah.
Like, the Arch Manning thing didn't work out.
Yep.
You were all riding your coattails. So, like, you made a good point about Lanning as well. Lanning has kept guys in Oregon. Like, who's the best player they lost in the portal?
I can't name him.
Right. Like, they keep their talent, and they have pretty much they've hit on every portal guy. The only guy that didn't was Mekhi Hughes, the running back. He's at Houston now. That didn't work out. He was supposed to be really good. But, like, outside of that, every guy he's got in the portal has worked. So you might be right, and in 2 years we're looking and saying, man, this team's even more loaded. But the difference is right now is the defensive line.
Yeah.
They have four dudes that are going to be, like, second to third round picks at the worst.
I mean, on paper going in, it's the best defensive line in the program's history.
Right, and so and it's probably the best in the nation right now. Like, Sukins is like...
It's either them or Indiana. Indiana with Daly now is unbelievable.
And that's something that the Ducks have never had before, right? Mm-hmm. They've never had that level of defensive line, which last year got Miami to the title game. We saw Indiana, the way they dominated. So, look, they may be in line in the next couple of years again to make national championships, but for right now, this is the best Oregon team on paper. And I think this is maybe the best team in the nation. So for me, it is, you got to be there.
Yeah.
You got to win. Like, that should be the expectations. We should win a national championship this year if I'm a Duck.
I mean, it's his record and just watching the games makes you know, really good coach.
Really good.
Puzzling how those two playoff games have ended. I mean, just like, I can't even put it into words.
Do you put that on Lanning or on the court? Because a lot of Ducks fans will say the coordinators, right?
Well,
it's always
Stein
and Lupoy.
Yeah.
All those guys. Is it a coordinator thing?
Last year, to me, We talked about this going into the playoff. When we found out those two were lead candidates, one was Will Stein going to Kentucky, felt like it was going to always happen.
Right.
And then LaPoy's name popped up. We talked about it on the show. And there's a quote from Florida coach, Dan Mullen.
Yes.
Famously at UNLV, he said, when I was a coordinator and I got the job at Florida or Mississippi State, I was a coordinator. From 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., I was the coordinator. From 6 p.m. until 6 a.m., I was the head coach of Mississippi State. That was the life you were living.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing. We talked about that on our show going into the playoff of like, this could be a problem. And people poo-pooed it until Indiana absolutely bludgeoned them. So I think last year was a weird combination of their coaches were kind of checked out building programs. The year before that, I have nothing. Just weren't prepared. Ohio State was. And, oh, by the way, Ohio State got to play the week before you against Tennessee. They absolutely got the rest together and hit their full stride. I mean, the kind of bad luck in some ways also can't excuse or explain how you in back-to-back years lose the way you've lost.
Well, and that goes into this year of, I think the biggest question is the coordinators. Like, you lost those guys, but
now
you
kept internal.
You kept internal.
Yep.
And Maringer was the Rutgers offensive coordinator in his one stop and was one of the worst offenses ever. Now, it's Rutgers. I understand that.
And it was also a long time ago.
It was
one season. I don't put any stock in
that. You don't put any stock into that?
Zero. Like, okay. If they struggle this year and we're not talking about massive O-line and quarterback injury, dude, I'll walk it right back and say, dude, I was wrong. Yeah. I don't even know what the offense is. It largely is probably going to be what Stein was doing. How can I put stock in a one-season sample at Rutgers when he's going to have this talent?
No.
You know?
You're probably right. That's just the only thing we can go off of. But I think it was interesting because everybody wanted the dude at Florida. He was at Georgia Tech last year, the offensive coordinator. He went to Florida. And I think a lot of Duck fans wanted him to be the offensive coordinator. Looked like they, you know, maybe they explored it. And they're like, no, we got this guy in-house. We're going to keep it kind of the same as it was. I don't necessarily love that, but Dan Lanning does, and Lanning has kind of earned that trust from me.
Like, who is he missed on? Like, in your point of the portal, who are the coaches he's missed on?
None.
Because when Kenny Dillingham got hired, I had somebody text me and say, the dude's never called plays. This is not a good hire.
And then everybody wanted him.
Everybody wanted him. He was gone in 1 year.
Will Stein was a UTSA guy. Bring him in, what, 2 years?
2 years.
He's at an SEC school.
That's, yeah.
Tosh Lupoy, like, he was just a recruiter. Obviously, he's got some, you know, he's not the best X and O's guy. He goes to Cal.
Maybe he's a little better than we give him
credit.
That's
what I'm saying.
You know?
Like, Lanning kind of has earned a bunch of trust for me.
That's what I'm saying.
Until they get absolutely railroaded.
That's why I don't put it in the Maringer thing. I'm like, it's 1 year. It's Rutgers, dude. You could be amazing. If you go to Rutgers, you're going to suck. You're going to suck, all right?
All right.
Let's get to the audio. I didn't get the audio part of that. Dan Lanning recapping day one of fall camp as a kickoff. And also, we've got some Jamarcus Shepherd at Oregon State. We'll have Greg Oden at 8. Pac-12 had a settlement with the Mountain West yesterday. And we can get into that a little bit today. But back with Lanning audio on The Fan.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves. And your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to some college football day one camp. Oh, there's nothing better, Stephen Vaughn, than finding out that the guys were ready and wish we could put on the pads.
Just a great offseason work. They came in shape, ready to go, you know, farther along than we thought, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Let me see if I could, give me a second here. I wanted to pull the cut and I forgot to. So Mike Locksley, do you know who that is?
Yeah, Maryland coach.
Maryland coach. He's one of the worst all-time coaches by a record if you look it up.
And he's been there for a long time.
Like 8 years. It's nuts. It doesn't make any sense. This is a real quote he said yesterday. He says, following consecutive 4-8 seasons, he said, tough times are behind us. He said, 4-8 seasons are two different stories. The 4-8 season 2 years ago is not the same 4-8 season last year.
Right. Obviously.
Has anybody ever stepped to a podium after day one of camp and said, we're not very good? How refreshing and also hilarious and awful would it be simultaneously if they just were like, I don't know if we're going to be very good this year, guys.
Right. Like, would that be... Do we want that? Like,
no, you don't want that.
As a sports culture, would we want that?
No.
Like,
no.
We're just kind of... We
would want it because that's great audio, right. But no fan would want that.
We're just not going to be great this year, guys.
What do you want me to say?
I mean, I'm sorry. I tried. I failed in the portal. We went after some guys. They didn't commit. We didn't have to, see, that's the thing. They would then flip it and be like, well, we didn't have the dollars. We just didn't have the money to spend, guys.
Well, in most cases, they're actually not wrong.
That's not my fault.
Yeah.
I can only control the money that I get.
Jed Fish basically said that at Big Ten Media.
Right.
Day.
So he basically said they're going to stink.
He's like, yeah, our NIL's terrible and it's not great. And all right, we'll find out. Greg Oden going to join us at the top of the hour. Dan Lanning after day one of fall camp.
Flew around. It's always a challenge day one as far as, you know, checking where you're at from a conditioning standpoint, where you want to put yourself at to where you can achieve at a really high level. Thought our guys pushed through that. There's no pads on, so we're not playing real football yet. But as far as assignments, guys are really up to date. Challenged some guys with different positions. Their flexibility, the more they can do for the team. So overall, satisfied, excited to watch the film.
Jamarcus Shepherd after day one at Oregon State fall ball.
Our quarterbacks were seeing the field really well. They threw some balls that I didn't think that they would have thrown during spring ball, and they took the liberty of attacking the defense a little bit more because they threw in some tighter windows, and it was good to see. It was good to see that they weren't reckless with the ball either. That, to me, is the part that we needed to clean up over the summer, and it looks pretty good today. They took care of it from that standpoint.
I just tell you right now, not feeling great about that position.
I tell you what, he did not sound like he had any expectations of Malik Murphy or Atkinson.
I heard yesterday that basically they don't want Murphy to be the starting quarterback, but they might not have a choice. There's a reason their over-under's, I think it's 4.5.
Yeah, it's low.
Is it 4.5 swag? 4.5, something like that? I have a bet that they'll win more than 2, but...
I thought it was 3.5, but...
It's 3.5 or 4.5.
Is it 3.5?
Let me see if I can find it.
I think the bet... Maybe the bet I made is 3.5. Maybe I think they can win 4 games.
Isn't that the other guy, Braden Atkinson?
I think you're right.
That's the guy.
You know,
but
what?
I mean that
I can't follow these.
As a beef there, Sprague. Did you?
I don't feel good.
Did that glean confidence?
No. Hey, our quarterback saw the field really well in 7-on-7,
and I wasn't expecting that.
And they've been turning it over all summer.
That was the weird part. He's like, dude, I kind of thought they were going to suck. They didn't fully suck.
They made throws I didn't know they were capable of making. What? You had spring ball. How bad was that? So Jamarcus Shepherd on his quarterbacks. We have 2 different O-line cuts, too. Both coaches talked about the offensive line. Here is Dan Lanning. The rotating offensive line caught wind.
Ooh.
And everybody was questioning Dan Lanning's offensive line prowess. Why are we rotating with 8 guys? Here's Dan Lanning's response to everybody talking about it.
It's interesting to me that it's become a conversation topic because we've done this every single year I've been here. Josh Connerly rotated in his freshman year. Jackson Powers Johnson rotated in. Poncho rotated in, and how do you think they got ready, right? That's how you get players ready, right? If whether it's a package, whether it's a different detail, but if you have guys that can play winning football, we've never started the season and finished the season with the same offensive line. I hope you have experience within that. So we're gonna have to work multiple guys at multiple positions to get them ready. We've had 3 groups in a row that were Joe Moore Award finalists. I don't think we've I think we've been sacked the least of anybody in college football over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. So all that added together, you know, for us, it's the system. It's what you want to be able to do. And I hope we have 8 players that can play on the offensive line, right? So let's figure out who's above the line. We're going to have to move guys around, put them in situations, and it means, you know, that we have good talent there, which is good. When you have a clear 5, that means you might not have a good number 6, right? I don't necessarily want a clear 5 yet. We're a long ways away from a game. Do I think there's benefits for continuity? 100%. And we'll get to that point. If that's something we feel like there's a big difference, then we'll do that. But if we think we have a young player that we can help grow and get ready to be able to make an impact, we want to be able to do that earlier than later.
I'll give Dirk credit. He nailed it. He literally brought up Connerly. He brought up Poncho. And he's like, dude, he's rotated guys in the past. I didn't jump into it as much as Dirk did, but just watching everybody freak out about the rotation of guys because he mentioned that as if he's not going to have a solid group by the end of the season. They've been Joe Moore Award finalists to this point, and it's kind of an overblown story, I think, down in Eugene.
Yeah, I mean, if by week seven you're still rotating a bunch of guys, then maybe we got a question. But sure, that hasn't happened the last few years. Like, he has solidified. I remember, what was it, 2 years ago, they played Idaho and Boise State, and those lines were terrible. They gave up a bunch of sacks to Idaho. I was at that game. I was like, this offensive line sucks. But then they were great. So, again, one of those things, another Dan Lanning thing that I'm going to trust going forward, if he thinks they got multiple guys that can play, he's going to give them some experience, and then they'll figure it out. But at the end, they'll have a solidified line.
Here's Jamarcus Shepherd on Oregon State's offensive line.
Today, it looks pretty good.
Okay.
I was very happy to see what we did today. Now I got to go watch the film and make sure that we had a couple communication errors. But as far as the physicality and toughness and how they approached their assignments, it was very, very encouraging.
I kind of appreciate the way he's explaining it. He also, it does come off a little like, wait, what, today? So yesterday, not great?
So Bet Online has Oregon State 3.5, but it's the 11-game schedule.
Oh, Greg Oden's here.
Okay. I saw DraftKings 4.5.
4.5 for Oregon State?
Yeah. Okay. So it just kind of depends if it's going to be the 12 games or the 11 games, because they got the flex schedule at the end.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I just, Oregon State. I don't know if I have a lot of high hopes right now.
Well, we had a couple of different, I know Phil Steele, and I can't remember
he's
who
down
else.
Down on them.
They were talking 4-8 is, I mean, what they're projected
that's
as.
That's double the win total there, Stevie Fire.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's 100% improvement from last year.
We'll find out what they are, because they got, what, Houston and Texas Tech at the start of the year. If they can keep it close, you're thinking, man, maybe they could compete with a bowl game.
But it is utterly depressing to think about a 4-8 season off a 2-10 season, but in a way, I think there's going to be aspects where you look and you go, is culture being established? Are they, you know, are they hanging in these games?
What do you turn over, 60, 70% of the roster?
Maybe more than that. Right. Yeah, it's a complete overhaul.
You're starting
here
from scratch.
Yeah, and that's, we knew he was going into that with it. All right, one more. Dan Lanning on samples being arrested. The video came out. K-Val sent out the video. The whole video. Not a good look. Here was Dan Lanning on it.
Yeah, I mean, we were aware of this back in April when it first happened. For one, we take it extremely seriously, right? There's accountabilities that are required, and they're required in this moment. And on the same note, they've been completed. But it's something we'll always take very serious. There's always consequences in those moments. And we handled that internally, like we do with several things that you guys don't necessarily know about.
Oh, SEC coach there. We handled it internally. Don't worry about it. Move on.
We had an internal investigation that we set apart. We did it by ourselves, and we came out really good in it. We looked really good in the situation. So
we've decided it's not as bad as you think it is.
Right. We decided that it was a great job by us.
That's a very SEC-like response there. By the way, also kind of teasing, more's happened here than you even know. And I'm like,
kind of respect it, though. You know?
I mean, he's kind of throwing in our face. We can't find out all the bad things that have happened off the field.
Hey, you know what? He's a good coach. He got interviewed by North Texas. Like, let's keep him here.
Yeah. So the video released by K-Val, the full video, and Rashad Samples with the DUI arrest back all the way in April. All right, there's a little bit of a snippet, a look of day one camp, Oregon State. Coming up in the third hour, it is a loaded third hour with one guest and one guest only. Gregory Oden's going to join us. Hour number 3 in studio. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1 The Fan.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.